Blog Talk Radio.
This is the EWN Radio Network. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and business coach. Join Steve and his guests to get answers to your questions and help break through to the next level in your business.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. How's it going today? I'm so glad that you chose to join to be with us again today. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen in and get some help and advice for both your life and your business so that in everything you do, you can thrive. Today, me and my special guest, Lee Caraher of Double Forte, we're going to talk to you about millennials and management. Now, I want to warn all of you that are in my generation or above, we are not going to have, the two old guys on the Muppet Show up at the balcony kind of a conversation. We are actually going to look at why it is important for us to know how to reach out and impactfully work with the millennials in our organization. So with that, I'd like to introduce you to Lee Caraher from Double Forte, and we are excited to spend some time with her today learning about millennials and management. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Steve, it's so great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, I'm just honored to have you here with us. So for folks that didn't get to read your bio and spy on your website, tell us a little bit about who you are and what's gotten you to this point so far.
Sure. So I am a mom of two teenagers. I am a wife of my husband, Pete, and I am an entrepreneur. I started this company, Double Forte, about 13 years ago. It's a public relations and digital marketing firm, headquartered in San Francisco. We have offices in New York and in Boston. And we have about 35, 40 people here now, mostly in San Francisco, working with good companies, with doing great things in their good, cool categories. That's my company. And then I wrote a book last year called Millennials in Management, which is really my experience about how to make a positive workplace for intergenerational teams after my own experience of failing at it miserably. I'm the last year of baby boomer, and the millennial generation, which this year is 15 to 35, is a very different animal than the one that I was trained on training. So those things together, are who I am.
The millennial mark, I never am totally sure where it actually starts. So for the phrase millennials, you said they're approximately 18 to 35?
15 to 35 this year. So 15. People born between 1980 and 2000. It's often known as Gen Y.
Okay.
Generally, basically all it tells you is when they were born. Right. But the term millennial really is so chock full of negative connotation that 68% of millennials, so 15 to 35 year olds, say they're not millennials, which technically is incorrect since they were born in that period. And, it's the U.S. Census that declares these generations. So it's just an age, but it's become such a negative term that really wanted to break that down in my book, because if we're thinking negative things about people who are sitting next to us, it's going to be a bad day, and I just don't have any time for bad days.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I totally get why they would be a little resistant to that. I remember when I turned 36, which was a couple of years ago now, but I remember being now in the age category of 36 to 50. And I was like,
exactly. Well, I think that there's some things that are just, regardless of what age you are, everyone goes through these stages, and the first stage is after college when we learn that not everything is social promotion, that we can, that everyone has to sort of get a B+ or an A- to get advanced in this world, and it doesn't just because you're got a year older, you don't get to the next grade. I think that's just hard anyway. So that is, you know, and that has nothing to do with being a millennial or not. It has to do with what stage of life we're in. But this term millennial has become sort of this catch-all for negativity of young people, and it's such a false equivalency that I do everything I can not to buy into it.
And that makes a lot of sense, because I mean, I think all of those groups, at least it's been my experience, you're going to find really great people in them and really bad people, and it doesn't matter what grouping they're put into.
Exactly.
I think people are just people, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, bad work ethic is a bad work ethic. It has nothing to do with how old you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of groups around the country in the last year. You know, well, I meet a lot of boomers who are like, I just don't want to hire them. And I just keep telling them, well, you might as well shut your business then, because a business without millennial is a business without a future. And, you know, our job as leaders is to adjust, to the situation that we're in, not to, you know, lament the past.
Absolutely. So talk to us in more detail. What is your basic concept behind millennials and management?
So the book came out of my experience. So I'll tell you a little bit about that. So I started my company in 2002 in San Francisco, and my goal with, you know, a business partner, and we decided that we were just going to hire people who knew what they were doing, and we weren't going to do it. I had come out of a very large multinational media company where I had managed 13 offices and about 650 people, and probably 75-80% of my people were under the age of 30. And it was exhausting, for lack of a better term. I left that company after 9/11 when 9/11 really stuck as a big milestone in my life. I actually didn't know anybody who died in any of those crashes, but I was on a United flight from New York exactly one week earlier on the Tuesday. And I sort of woke up on 9/11. My child woke me up, told me he was watching some television show with planes going into buildings. And I was not that happy about that. And then I realized what was going on. And I, you know, that moment in time when I realized it could have been me, I decided I was going to get out of that company. I was just really not happy with it. So, you know, fast forward a year later, we started this company. And we only hired people with about 10 years of experience for the first, you know, 8 years of the company, which meant everyone was about 32 or 33. In 2008, when the economy tanked, I've been through these tankings before. This is my first, at that time, I guess it was my third downturn, my fourth downturn, 2008, my fourth downturn. And it's always important to look at your business model at any time the economy or your microeconomy in your own company changes. And what was very clear to me very quickly was, one, that we can't assume that the business model that we had going into this downturn would be the one that took us out of the downturn, number one. And number two, if our business model was predicated on 10 years of experience, basically in my business, public relations, marketing, digital media, no one got hired in 2000 to 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. Basically, there are very few people who got hired into this industry in San Francisco during those years, which meant we were going to run out of people who had 10 years of experience very quickly. We had a big donut hole of 10 years of experience. So we decided to drive some margin into the business and to make sure we could bring new blood in all the time by hiring junior staff. So we went about that. It took us a while because we were, the whole business was soft, as you can imagine. We hired our first millennial. Didn't know what that meant. We just hired the first young person, a younger person than us. And again, I'd had lots of experience in this category of young people in the office. And her first day, I came in a little late, and there was a dog in the office. And I was like, what's this dog doing here? And the dog had a Kimball dispenser and a water purifier and a big red vest, which meant this dog was a service dog. And I said, why is a dog here? And the woman who she worked for said, well, she just brought her dog. I said, well, did she ask? No. Did she tell us? No. Is anybody allergic to dogs? I don't know. We'll go find out if anyone's allergic to dogs first. It became very clear it's a service dog. The dog is Chihuahua, and in my life experience, service dogs aren't Chihuahuas. But the dog had been legally servicized. I guess it's probably not a word, but I think you know what I mean. And I was sort of shocked. And I wasn't mad. I was just sort of like, wow, she didn't think to ask or to tell us. She just brought the dog. So that sort of passed me by. And then this woman had so many great ideas. She was in my office all the time with great ideas. And I sort of didn't know what to do with all her great ideas. And then one day she left early. She didn't tell us. She wasn't going to be in the next day. She had to go to San Diego. And I was just frustrated, and I call a colleague. And I said, oh, my gosh, this woman, she showed up with a dog her first day, and now we got service dogs all over the office, and she left. She didn't tell us, and she wants all these things. And I was just mostly flabbergasted with the fact that there was an assumption. There wasn't an expectation that she would have to talk with people about how she was working with everybody. So I call a friend, and he was just, oh, my gosh, these millennials are terrible. Get out now. You know, he was like, abandon ship. And I was like, what are you talking about? What's a millennial? Didn't know. And he goes, oh, they're just terrible. And I sort of dismissed him. I said, you know, they can't all be terrible. This can't be true. Oh, they're all terrible. And I hung up the phone with him, and I talked to somebody else, and they said the same thing. And by the end of this week, I had talked to four or five people who said exactly the same thing about millennials. So I looked up millennials, and I found over 2 million negative entries about working with millennials. So I sort of let that go, because we only had one. And I was like, well, we just talk to her. We just tell her, you know, here's what we expect, and here's what you need to do. And we did that, and she was like, she was flabbergasted. She was like, oh, I didn't have a clue. No one ever told me that I had to tell people I was bringing my dog. It just wasn't her expectation. Fast forward about another 8-9 months, I guess. I hired 6 millennials within about 2 or 3 months of each other. No, probably 2 months of each other, and they all failed. 100% failure on 6 people who got hired in the same period. And in my career, I'd never had 100% failure on recruiting, ever. I was known for recruiting. And one person could be their problem. 2 people could be there, maybe their problem, but 6 could not be their problem. 6 had to be our problem. And started looking at it, and really, I had sort of forgotten those conversations I'd had 8 or 9 months earlier, 10 months earlier, about all this negative stuff, and because I had dismissed it, and then we just played right into it, and we did everything wrong. We did everything wrong about bringing the younger generation into our business. So I did some more reading about it, and it was still negative, and the entries had doubled by that time. So what I decided to do was just ignore it, because I think negative input gets negative output, and I'm really not interested in negative output, and go back to the basics and do some reading and do some talking to people of all ages. And what came out of that is our method here of just inclusion and understanding what the different generations want from a career and what their expectations of our career. And then adjusting our expectations to those different expectations among the generations so that we can have a sustainable business that doesn't force people out the door, either by choice or by not, because we're just not understanding. And that is a very long answer to your question, but that's basically how I got there.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And you got me intrigued now with some things. I have to, interject that I am definitely not a millennial. I'm 48 years mm-hmm. old. And
you're a Gen Xer.
With that in mind, I want to try to make sure that I don't play into the stereotype, these young kids, try not to be a crotchety old man. I think I'm too young for that. You know what I mean? So I hope that you now have opened your mind like I have to embracing the concept that millennials are an important and impactful part of your business. Think about that a little bit, and we will be right back on Thriving Entrepreneur on the EWN Radio Network.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Are you ready to be a celebrity expert in your field? Are you your own best-kept secret? Do you have talents you want to share with the world? Are you ready to be seen as an authority? Do you have a message you need to share with the world? You know to your core you can help people if you could just reach them. Kathy and I want to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. Are you ready for this? How would you like to be recognized on top media outlets? What would becoming an Amazon bestseller do for your business? How many people could you inspire? And it doesn't take a lifetime. It doesn't take years. It doesn't take months. In fact, in just 60 minutes, you will become a celebrity expert in your field. In 30 days, you will be a best-selling author, and you will be seen on NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, Fox, and the Wall Street Journal. How does this work? Will you be interviewed on our show, Thriving Entrepreneur, which will then be broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and many others, as well as promoted to a network that has a database of over 500,000 people. Your expert interview will be published in your very own book, which is guaranteed to hit best-selling author status on Amazon. Your name and the book title will appear in major media outlets, including ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN. We can guarantee that. Plus, as a bonus, you'll get a custom social media package to promote your book and an MP3 of your interview with 5 key tips on how you can repurpose the content for marketing and sales. Don't be the best kept secret. Get ready to play an A game and be the authority in your field. Go to wehelpyouthrive.com and click on the authority package to get yours today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thank you for listening. I am here today with Lee Caraher of Double Forte, and we are talking about millennials and management. So let's dive into it. Let's
sure.
talk about specifically millennials. Now, again, yeah. for people who didn't catch it the first time, we're talking anybody from 15 to 35, which is a huge age bracket.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
And really, we break it down into three groups. So the millennials, I break into three groups. The first group is this year, 29 to 35. So this is the group that came into the workplace after 9/11. Their sense of security and privacy is very different than yours, Steve, because, you know, you actually probably, as an adult, went to the gate to pick somebody up at the airport. If you were 35 years old, you never did that. Also, in most businesses, large buildings around in cities, now more than 50% of the time you would give your ID. You're not allowed in the building without giving an ID. That was not the norm, unless you're in a federal building. before 2001 and 2002. So your idea of freedom, and what I mean is freedom of access, and privacy and security is very different as a millennial than a Gen Xer, absolutely. And obviously the economy was tight, and particularly on the coasts where the dot-com boom and bust really had an impact. You came into the working world in a compromised situation where our country was in, you know, just heightened alert, going into wars, et cetera. If you are 22 to 28 this year, then you came into the working place after 2008, the end of 2008, the total Great Recession. And, you know, there are still people who graduated college in this period who are looking, you know, are trying to have their jobs reflect their education and where they, quote unquote, should have been after getting a college degree, because there are more millennials with college degrees by percentage and by sheer number than any other generation in our history. And because the economy was in such a disaster, again, there are still people, millennials, who are not living up to what their expectations or their parents' expectations were of their education turning into a job. And then, of course, the last group, 15 to 21-year-olds, they're in school. And this group of kids is learning totally differently than the oldest group of millennials. They are learning with video at night and homework in the classroom. They're learning. They have iPads and computers in the classroom, increasingly in a one-to-one ratio where everyone has some sort of device they're on all the time. And, you know, Common Core, I mean, everything has changed. So how people are learning is so different for this youngest group of millennials than for the oldest group of millennials. So while it is a very large group, 20-year span of generation, which is not atypical in how we've talked about generations in our history, in our 24/7 world, 20 years feels like a long time. And if you break them down into those sort of those cultural milestones, they're easier to understand.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense. So, you know, we obviously don't want to preclude everybody under the age of 35 from working in our company. But what are mm-hmm. the secrets that we need to learn in order to work with these three groups and have them be effective contributing members of our team?
Absolutely. Well, I think some of the negative things that people think about, right? One is that they're entitled. Two is that they're job hoppers. Three is they're rude and disrespectful. And if we peel the onion in those three things, then I think some really important themes emerge. One is on the entitlement. My experience is that I don't think millennials are entitled. I think they've been conditioned. And the conditioning has a lot to do with our education system and also helicopter parents, which I think they mean well, but they really do not do any favors for their children. So in the last 15 years, the average grade in college has risen almost a full point across the country, and which means in many places around the country, you could get higher than a 4.0, even on a 4.0 scale. So the top might be 4.0, but some people get 4.5s or 4.6s. To the point where some colleges are actually publishing the curve on every class if they don't let people go above a 4.0 so that they can justify their 3.8 as summa cum laude. Like UC Berkeley does this, one of the top institutions in the country. They felt that they had to justify their grades because there are so many competing great institutions that were, you know, had kids getting 4.5s, 4.6s. So if your expectation is that your work is great, and you come into your work is obviously great, you're getting A-minuses, the number one grade given at Harvard University is A-minus, how is it possibly true that all this work is A-minus work, right? So if you graduate from college, you get into the workplace, and you are used to having your work be A-minus work, or used to be able to negotiate your work into a better grade, and you get into the workplace, and you've passed in your work, and you think you're done, and you're not done. This is happening all over the country. You're not done. You have to do it again. No, it's good. it's actually not ready for prime time. You need to improve it. No, it's fabulous. It's not that good. You really need to fix it again. And this is the first place we see friction. This expectation that my work was fantastic because that is what they grew up with. And then the reality that their managers or their leaders or their cohort finds out that their work is subpar, and that conflict arises. So that's the first piece of where we find conflict. And, you know, we've had the great inflation thing and then the helicopter parent thing. We have, you know, I speak as a hopefully a recovering helicopter parent. And I just found it so much faster if I just dealt with things from my child than have coach him through the things that he needed to learn himself. We don't have, we're a time constrained society, and I think part of that has really contributed to the fact that more and more parents are helping their kids inappropriately. And I speak as one who has done that. And I have clients who have no parents at interview policies at their workplace, because we have parents of adult children showing up in the workplace to accompany their children, their adult children, to interviews all over the country. So it's a little crazy. So if we have this expectation that our work is great because that's what has been reinforced through grades, and that our parents will help us because that's what our parents have helped us with, and all of a sudden you get into a workplace where these things are not normal. they're so entitled, their mother did this, or they're so entitled, their father made a phone call, or they're so entitled, they think their work is so great. It's not rocket science to figure out why that there is this gap in expectation. The second piece, so we just have to, you know, and how you crack that code is just to start from the beginning. Please don't bring your parents, and sometimes you have to say that. And then here's what we expect from work, and here's an example of good work. And here, you know, you're not going to get it the first time. And here's how we're going to coach you to really good work. And our expectation is that it's going to take, you know, 3 to 4 months for you to really feel comfortable in the quality of your work here. But we don't like conflict, I think, in general. People don't like conflict. They don't want to be seen. It's a very rare person who wants to be seen as the jerk, I think. And we just don't want to be that person who pushes. But if we let people be wrong for a long time, then they just feed into this concept that they're entitled. The second thing on job hoppers is, you know, millennials have a reputation for being job hoppers, even in an economy where there haven't been as many jobs. And this, too, is that, you know, this group, these millennials, have grown up with boomer and Xer parents who have lost their jobs, who thought they were set for life at a company, who have been displaced in their work and lost tremendous amounts of money from their retirement plans. And their parents have shown them and or told them, do not count on one company. Do not count on a company to see you through your whole career. You need to make sure you craft your own career so that you're not stuck like I was and got flat-footed by the economy. So it is that, too, is not rocket science to figure out why they don't expect to be with you for a long time. And I think if we turn that around to say, okay, so in San Francisco, and this is not true everywhere, but in San Francisco, I'll give you an example, the average number of months, not even years, the months that millennials stay in a job is under 24, under 2 years. So if we, and sometimes in some categories, it's 13 months. So if we have the point of view, it's like, we know they're going to leave. How do I keep them here longer? We know they're going to leave. They've been told they expect to leave. They expect to craft their own careers with sort of joining of dots, you know, dots in different places. So how do I keep them here longer than they expect to be here? And if we have that frame of mind, then we're just much more open. We're just much more in a place of helping them understand opportunity in our own entities, helping them understand how their experience will help them go forward, help them understand, you know, that they need to, whoever it is, you know, can have a great career and that you are part of that great career. And when you have that point of view, my experience is that you can keep people longer, up to twice as long. So if you keep someone who thinks they're going to be there for 24 months, for 4 years, 48 months, you've saved yourself a bunch of money, It's a much more sustainable business model. And you have probably have somebody, most of the time you have somebody who's leading you who feels good about your company and who will be your part of your alumni group always and recommend you and bring you people and will patronize you, whatever, you know, become someone who uses your services. So the negative thing about the job hopper is that we have created job hoppers because they know from their own parents' experience not to expect longevity or safety in one job. So just understanding that really helps. And the third thing I was going to talk about, disrespectful and rude. Well, we find this happens a lot, they're so rude. They go into restaurants with their hats on their heads or their jeans are baggy or they don't know what to wear or they're chewing gum or whatever. And particularly in big cities where there's so much transience of people who come from all over the country, in all cities all over the country, different parts of the country have different standards of comportment and etiquette. And in my own company, small company, we have people from Colombia, Canada, or some people who are born in California, half the company's from somewhere on the East Coast, and we have lots of people from the Midwest. So all those different places in the country and the world have different etiquette rules. And if you think about, number one, so creating a standard of here's what we expect at our company, right? We expect that you will take your dishes to the kitchen. We expect that if you have, that you will not eat before everybody sits down. We expect that you'll put your napkin into your lap, those kinds of things. I used to recruit people in my recruiting process, take people to dinner or for lunch, and just have a conversation, just see how they handle themselves in the conversation. And I found myself a few years ago, probably 5 years ago now, I didn't hire two people who just failed miserably at the lunch test, right? And I was so dumb. So, I really, after we passed on them and they got other jobs, I just hit myself in the head. I'm like, I can teach someone how to eat. I can't teach someone how to have initiative. But I can teach someone in an afternoon how to go to a restaurant. Take your hat off, put your phone away, take your napkin, put it in your lap, use the utensils on from the outside in, whatever the rules are, right? I can teach people that. Just because I didn't grow up knowing how to use utensils, what we in San Francisco call the proper way or wherever else has a proper way, that's not indicative of the fact that they are rude. It's indicative of the fact that they don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So we actually created, I created this box of etiquette tips just so that we could have conversations about it.
I think that's a great idea. There are a lot of people that if they know better, they can do better. But if we don't teach them, if nobody shows them, we really shouldn't expect that they are just going to naturally learn a skill that has never been taught to them. So think about that during this break. We are going to come back and talk more to Lee Carraher about millennials and management here on Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is the EWN Radio Network. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Are you ready to be a celebrity expert in your field? Are you your own best-kept secret? Do you have talents you want to share with the world? Are you ready to be seen as an authority. Do you have a message you need to share with the world? You know to your core you can help people if you could just reach them. Kathy and I want to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. Are you ready for this? How would you like to be recognized on top media outlets? What would becoming an Amazon bestseller do for your business? How many people could you inspire? And it doesn't take a lifetime. It doesn't take years. It doesn't take months. In fact, in just 60 minutes, you will become a celebrity expert in your field. In 30 days, you will be a best-selling author, and you will be seen on NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, Fox, and the Wall Street Journal. How does this work? Will you be interviewed on our show, Thriving Entrepreneur, which will then be broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and many others, as well as promoted to a network that has a database of over 500,000 people. Your expert interview will be published in your very own book, which is guaranteed to hit best-selling author status on Amazon. Your name and the book title will appear in major media outlets, including ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN. We can guarantee that. Plus, as a bonus, you'll get a custom social media package to promote your book and an MP3 of your interview with 5 key tips on how you can repurpose the content for marketing and sales. Don't be the best kept secret. Get ready to play an A game and be the authority in your field. Go to wehelpyouthrive.com and click on the authority package to get yours today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. I'm here with Lee Carraher of Double Forte, and we are talking to you today about millennials, about some of the misconceptions that many of us have and how to make them effective members of our team. It's really important that we have intergenerational teams so that we have an intergenerational company. It is really, really important that if we want to have the widest impact we possibly can, that we are working with the widest and broadest grouping of people inside of our business. I mean, nobody would expect you to discriminate against a person because they're too young or because they're too old. Let's also not discriminate against somebody because they happen to be part of a generation. Let's take the time to teach them, and let's take the time to understand what their thought process is, and then help them be able to really step in and help us out with things. So, Lee, tell us a little bit more about why we are at this place and how things have changed from what, you know, the baby boomers would have experienced to how things are right now.
It is only in the last 8 years that all over the country now, at every ball game, baseball game, hockey game, because it's a puck game, football game, soccer game, that the announcer comes on to the speaker and says, please rise and take your hat off. When I was growing up, you did not have to tell people to rise. You never had to tell people to put your hand over your heart, and you never had to tell people to take your hat off. You just knew to do. It really struck me when I was in England earlier this fall. I went for the World Rugby Cup playoffs. My husband's a huge rugby fan. And in England, they never ask you to rise or take your hat off. Everyone just stands up and takes their hats off. But when the American team played, they said it. Please rise and take your hat off. And it was really struck me really hard that there's just a difference in how I, as a boomer, grew up and how the millennials have grown up in terms of expectations of that kind of stuff. So if we have the point of view that they just don't know and that they're not being rude on purpose, then we can get into the conversation of here's the rules or here's the etiquette things that we are, as a culture, have in our company. And I'll give you another example. There was a woman who we were recruiting for a client, who's going to go in-house at a client, and I was, she had the job. Basically, she had the job sewn up, big job, high salary job. And I was at, we were at an event where I was with my client who had her contract, the contract with this woman they were going to hire, in her bag, and I was there. And the woman, the recruit, takes out a box of Altoids, and she takes out her box, opens the lid, and she puts the Altoid in her mouth, closes up the box, throws it back in her purse. And my client was so incensed, she did not get the job. Because there she had a tin of Altoids made to share, and she did not share them. And for my client, that was indicative of the fact that she was not a collaborative person. I mean, it really struck, that really struck me like, wow. Like, of course you would share, number one. But this woman did not know that was even expected in a social situation that you would share something. And she lost that big job right there. So I don't think people mean to be rude. I think they don't know, or they come from someplace different where the rules may have been different. Those three things together, really, you know, our expectations of should, they should know, why don't they know? You know, if we can just erase, every time you feel yourself saying should, and if you take the attitude like they don't know, instead of they're bad people or they're rude or they're wrong or whatever, it just interrupts us to be able to have more productive conversations with our people so that they can understand our whatever the culture is in your business, and so they can really be participating in, you know, achieving to your standard. Another long answer, sorry.
Oh, no, it's all good. I'm really appreciating it and thinking about so many things. And, you know, it's interesting to think about the things that we take for granted and then assume that other people know. And so it's a very good reminder. So I know that there are people who, even with all the information, I'm sure you've ran into this a lot, that are still like, no, I'm still just not going to. So tell us why. Why would we, or why should we really, there went that word you just told us not to use, make sure that we do have millennials that are in our company?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing is age is on their side, not ours. And again, I'm a boomer. I'm a last year boomer. And if we recall when we were 35 or 30 and coming up in our careers, you know, most as entrepreneurs and leaders, you know, most of us were hard charging and we're, you know, like, you know, Garrison Keillor says, you know, above average, right? Everyone's above average.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the world's not above average, right? Most of the world's not Lake Wobegon. But age is on their side. And if we, most boomers, and most Gen Xers think they're going to work much longer than they did 10 years ago. 10 years ago, most boomers thought they were going to be out of the workplace by 55, if not earlier. And that is statistically impossible for the vast majority of the American population. Most boomers think more than, I'm just trying, so boomers this year are 51 to 69. I think I got that right. And most boomers, like when I say most, I mean 72% or something like that, that's probably the wrong number, but the right scale, think they're going to have to work past 74. Well, when's the last time you hired someone who was 73, 74, right?
Mm.
Very challenging. We have, you know, in the 2008, all over this country, that whole EVP, executive vice president, vice president line got taken out of this, of our economy, along with the people on the very bottom, the people in the mailroom and the people who were secretaries. Those people got taken out of the economy, and we've become much more of a do-it-yourself group in terms of getting, you know, we do many more things today than because we have technology that helps us do that than we used to. But if we imagine that we can have a company that will be relevant, because, you know, business is all about relevance, how relevant you are dictates how much you can make and how much you can charge. If we imagine we can stay relevant to a growing population of millennials, which is the largest population we're going to have, we have 80 million millennials today in the United States. We have 78, 77 million boomers, and we have 40 546 million Xers. So millennials outstrip us. If we imagine that we can be relevant without in the business place, without a millennial in the business, I mean, that is a superhuman who can be relevant to people who we are going to be dependent on buying in our products and services if we don't have some of them in the workplace.
That makes a lot of sense. And so do you find then that you have to guide them into giving you the information the way that you need it, or do they, in spite of all the other things that you have to teach them, kind of naturally keep you relevant with their what originally may feel like off-the-wall ideas?
Yeah, I think relevance is, you know, first of all, right, this is a group that is digitally native. This group grew up with phones in their hands, right, no matter how old they are. And it's true that the iPad did not exist for the oldest group of millennials, that is, as opposed to the youngest group of millennials who's learning on them in the classroom. But this is a digitally native group. They are used to being one click away from any information they want, one email away from anybody they want, one tweet away from making an impact, right? Just today, you know, the Mizzou president of Mizzou resigned after the students on the campus, you know, were able to command tremendous amount of social media and then traditional media coverage for their dissatisfaction in him and how the administration has paid attention to things on campus around diversity and tolerance. You know, never would have happened. This is not, I mean, that is so far from the reality of something happening literally, well, probably not 8 days overnight, gone from some guy who started a hunger strike for this, and now 8 days later, the president of the university resigned. I mean, they're used to having impact, you know? So, one, just having that capacity in your entity to understand how to capture and rally impact with social media is tremendously helpful. They also, you know, this is a group that wants to change the world. If you ask a millennial, in fact, there was a Pew Research thing, I think just this past weekend, if you ask a millennial, you know, what they're looking for in work, money is not their number one motivator. Money was definitely my number one motivator, but it's not their number one motivator. Meaningful work comes up first. A place where I have opportunity comes up second. People will take less money if they have work that matters where they are listened to. When I was researching for my book, I talked to more than 1,000 millennials either talking to them, surveying them, or having email conversations with them. And time after time after time, I excerpt some of these conversations in my book. But there's this one woman, 27, she'd had four jobs by the time she was 27. And when I looked at her resume, it very much looked like she was taking a big step back to the job she had. And so I asked her, I said, so it looks like you took a step back to take the job you have. And she said to me, yeah, I know it looks like that on paper. And I actually make less money here than I did before, but this, I'm making a difference here. People care what I think. They're asked for my input. And they may not be taken all the time, but at least they're listening. And I know that I matter here. And I heard that over and over and over and over and over again. And that's been borne out, in many surveys from other top-notch institutions across the country. So if you understand motivation, so the first place on motivation is, what are you looking for? What do you hope for this job? What can you contribute? What would you hope for? Here's the position. Here's why this position matters. A lot of the time, we don't take the time to explain why even the bottom rung of the, whoever's on the bottom rung, right, that job matters. And if that job doesn't happen, then this job can't happen. If that doesn't happen, we all fail, you know, that kind of stuff. Things that used to be taken for granted by at least my generation, the boomers are the wait my turn generation. There were 78 million of us, right? And we just knew if we just waited it out, our turn would come because, you know, time was on our side. Well, 20 years, 30 years later, time is not on our side, right, as boomers. Time is on millennial side, even though they've come through these two big waves of, 9/11 and then 2008 of economy problems. Time is on their side to create the job that they want. So if we, they have the advantage of being digitally native. They have the advantage of seeking for meaning. They think they have the advantage of understanding work-life balance, right? Because they want it day one. They've heard it from their parents, and particularly working moms. And I can, as a working mom, and my mother was one of those pioneers in the 70s and 80s who went back to graduate school and then went to work, and sort of the sneaker brigade. She told me, and I've told my kids, we're working to have balance here. It's the narrative of the last 25 years of business, really into the last 4 years. So we have to, they expect it and they'll give things up for it. And if you can understand their motivation and that it's different, and understand where it's different, then we have a much better opportunity to create workplaces that not just accommodate, but help everybody thrive. And my other point of view on this is that if you do things that help millennials, everybody benefits. If you do things that help millennials understand what their role is, who doesn't want to know what their role is, right?
Yeah.
Millennials are a high appreciation group. They're used to, everybody wins soccer, which is so popular all over the country. It's great for up to second graders. It's not great so great, when you're 22, but it's sort of what's happened, right, around the country. They're used to appreciation. They're used to trophies, all that kind of stuff. I mean, my kid has trophies bigger than his head for things he could care less about. And I take nice pictures of those trophies. He doesn't really care about them, though. So, understanding the motivation is half the battle.
The book is called Millennials and Management, and Lee, I think it's so amazing and a real epiphany, I'm sure, for a lot of people that it's real easy to fall into that trap of this younger generation, you sound like your grandparents used to,
Oh, it's so funny. I was digging into the research, we talk about it as if there's never been intergenerational conflict ever before, right? Ever before in history. I think it's probably on page 3 of my book, I have this quote from Socrates that says exactly the same thing, right? This is 400 years before Christ. This is a long time, right?
Yeah.
And I have a degree in medieval history, which is basically 1,000 years of intergenerational conflict. So, but it just feels different to us. I think it feels different to us for several reasons. One is we're in a 24/7 media world, so we can actually talk about these things where we would have had a filter on our heads, before, number one.
Mm.
Number two is this is the first time in American history we've had four generations in the workplace at the same time. So people who are 21 to 77 in the workplace. Many, many workplaces have four generations. So millennials, Gen Xers, boomers, and silents. And then increasingly, they'll have three generations, millennials, Xers, and boomers. And the age range of people expecting to work from 21 to 74, that has not been our general expectation in our history, particularly modern history, that is not agriculture. And agriculture history, if people expected to live and work on the farm forever. But in the, in the white-collar situation, that has not been our expectation. But things are different.
So, Lee, do you then work as a consultant with people who want to embrace what you've been telling us but don't even know where to start?
Yes. So my company, Double Forte, like I said, is a public relations social media firm, and we also do a lot of work on internal communications. And at the same, I was actually asked to write this book. I didn't have in my head, I'm going to write a book about millennials. But I was asked to write this book by my clients because they were having, our point of view as an agency is if you don't have good relationships and good communications internally, don't stop talking to people outside your company to get to buy the services. What you really need to do is You hunker down and make sure that your whole company is on the same page and are the best advocates they can be for your services and products. So by default, it had turned the work I personally do had turned into this millennial counseling stuff. When I published the book, I actually had to open up a different sort of group here that does this kind of workshop. We do workshops, do a lot of speaking around the country, go into, you know, companies and organizations and talk about this, and then provide a lot of tools so that people can, you know, really take, you know, it's one thing to, you know, to read a book. It's another thing to actually apply it in the workplace. So my workshops are about how to apply these things. So you take, you know, a couple of nuggets back to your own teams and start working them to your advantage.
Well, great. That's Lee Caraher from Double Forte. That's double-forte.com. DOUBLE-FORTE.com. Her book, Millennials and Management, I really encourage a lot of people who have found themselves feeling like maybe they have become the older generation and are grumpy old people to get the book and read it and you know, allow some of these epiphanies to take root in your company. I think it'll be a really good thing for you. Lee, I really appreciate you spending the time with us today to help us, you know, see some light in what many people have felt despondency in.
Thank you so much, Tim. I so appreciate it.
Yeah. Again, that's Lee Caraher from DoubleForte.com. I'm so glad when we have guests that come on and help challenge us and help us grow our businesses. I want to leave you with this thought. Remember that you are uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose. The world needs you. And Kathy and I are here to help. There are those around you who also have their own special, unique brilliance. And the world needs them to be able to shine too. I encourage you this week to look around at the untapped resources that might be right by you that could help take your business to the next level so that you can live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. I hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Are you ready to be a celebrity expert in your field? Are you your own best-kept secret? Do you have talents you want to share with the world? Are you ready to be seen as an authority? Do you have a message you need to share with the world? You know to your core you can help people if you could just reach them. Kathy and I want to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. Are you ready for this? How would you like to be recognized on top media outlets? What would becoming an Amazon bestseller do for your business? How many people could you inspire? And it doesn't take a lifetime. It doesn't take years. It doesn't take months. In fact, in just 60 minutes, you will become a celebrity expert in your field. In 30 days, you will be a best-selling author, and you will be seen on NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, Fox, and the Wall Street Journal. How does this work? Will you be interviewed on our show, Thriving Entrepreneur, which will then be broadcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and many others, as well as promoted to a network that has a database of over 500,000 people. Your expert interview will be published in your very own book, which is guaranteed to hit best-selling author status on Amazon. Your name and the book title will appear in major media outlets, including ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN. We can guarantee that. Plus, as a bonus, you'll get a custom social media package to promote your book and an MP3 of your interview with 5 key tips on how you can repurpose the content for marketing and sales. Don't be the best kept secret. Get ready to play an A game and be the authority in your field. Go to wehelpyouthrive.com and click on the authority package to get yours today.